welcome to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tusky Farm Radio. Glad you can join us on another Saturday edition of the Shukri Wright Show, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. Thank you for making this show part of your day. I have two live in-guests in studio here with me today. So without further ado, my right-hand man, Bruin Cowboy Mike, say hello. I need you to speak into the microphone. and Celtics super fan Lucky Lou's in the house. Hope everybody's ready, excited for today's edition of the Shukri Wright Show. I'm fired up. I don't know about you, but I know that the holiday season is here, and it's becoming increasingly clear to me that it is absolutely time to rev up the scene in Boston sports. But before anything, I actually want to take a moment to pause, because today is an important anniversary in United States history. Normally, I've only done this only once so far, and this was on 9/11. But today is it's the 78th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. And I just want to take a pause, just a brief moment of silence, to remember those who died on that day during the Japanese attacks at Pearl Harbor that ushered the United States into World War II. So I just want to take a moment to just take a moment of silence to remember those who passed and honor those memories, and as well as show a great deal of appreciation to those who fought during those wars, and as well as continue to serve our country today. Thank you. So how are you guys doing today?
Good. Yeah, not too bad at all.
Come a little closer. All right. I don't know. Like, don't be shy to speak to the camera, folks. Come on. You're killing me, Smalls. more than anything, I want you guys to definitely feel comfortable. Have fun. I mean, this is what I do. This is my career and my passion, talking sports. And let's get right into it. This is a huge weekend for the Patriots.
Yes, it is.
And one thing that I got an eye on is that we got Patrick Mahomes come back tomorrow into Gillette for the first time since last October. Was it last October? It was November. I believe it was November. It was early November, yeah. So there has been so much talk this week about the Patriots. It's been open season for the Patriots. They're not as good as we thought they were, or they are the worst 10-2 team of all time. Blah, 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 blah. That's been the talk all week.
Yes,
let's just
people
cut out.
Spoiled.
Right.
Spoiled.
Right.
Yep.
Let's cut out all the nonsense right here, right now. And I'm going to put this on the table. Open feast, open discussion. If the Patriots are going to receive any type of respect from the national media, I have to openly say that they need an elite performance defensively tomorrow against Patrick Mahomes, because let's face it, in the four games through this five-game monstrous gauntlet of the schedule, they're 2-2, including the loss last week Sunday against Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans.
Right.
So with that being said, I have to ask you guys the following. How important is tomorrow's game, especially defensively, as well as for the offense that has been under extreme scrutiny this whole week in terms of getting them in the right track as we approach January?
They definitely have to step it up to that point. And the win has to be something that shows who they are. It can't be a three-point win. It can't be, you have to, no field goal win. They're going to have to take it, and they're going to have to take it, I say, like, by two touchdowns.
I
to
agree.
At least look to be dominant again and to show everybody.
I agree. Yeah. I think that the Patriots have been, defense is important. I most certainly will say, defense is important. But ultimately, their offense, really, would they have to come out with offense. I think if the defense came up and they won a defensive win and it was by a touchdown or two, defensive touchdowns, that's one thing.
Absolutely.
But last week people saw Brady yelling at his players. you know.
Which you rarely ever see.
You don't see him react to that.
Yeah.
So if they respond and they put up a great performance, then I think that would say, hey, maybe this was a, you know, just a hiccup. If not, I'm not really sure what else could happen, you know. They really need offensively to come out.
Absolutely. And the one thing that really has stood out to me in watching the games and doing some analysis as to what's wrong with the Patriots offensively, the one thing that stood out is that they haven't had that quote-unquote home run target, a guy that that poses as a deep threat in the game.
Yeah, that.
Now, what really grinds my gears, especially when I look at this receiving core, especially at the depth at the position, is we talked about this before we went on the air, and I think this is absolutely worth elaborating further on now. Go back to September 14th. We had Antonio Brown, Demaryius Thomas. Of course, you still have Edelman. But you had a great deal of depth at that position.
Exactly. Yeah.
Here we are on December 7th. Your number one receiving target is Julian Edelman.
That's it.
And then everybody else, Philip Dorsett, N'Keal Harry, Mohamed Sanu.
It's evaporated.
You basically went from having a stick of butter to absolutely just, it's melted on the toast. That's all we're left with at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I think that because now it was pretty evident the last game, double teaming Edelman. And I think they're double teaming because they know they're not going to get big plays off these other guys.
Oh, for sure.
And that's obviously causing the offense to be just stagnant. I mean, how many running plays did you see coming around, you know?
Well, that's what it's going to be. You double team Edelman. You got no other receivers. They know they're going to have to run the ball.
Yeah.
And that you focus on Edelman, you've got the game for them. Mm-hmm. And they've got no other options, you know? And like we said earlier, even with Edelman, he's a slot receiver. Yeah. He's not going deep.
Right.
Not going deep at all.
Right.
And the one thing that really, as I begin to really deep into the numbers, you look at the red zone, and you would think that the red zone, well, they've been average. They've been at least okay. No. No. It's been the furthest thing from okay. The furthest thing from, well, at least they're pedestrian. No. Like, I read an article that I have to really share excerpts with you that I read in today's Boston Globe that really explained just how horrific it is.
Yeah, it is.
And I got to give Nora Princiati of the Boston Globe a great deal of credit because this came out just 2 hours ago. And here's the thing. Right now, in the red zone, they're 24th in the league. They're 24th in the league in red zone offense. Now, you guys would agree, and feel free to disagree, but one of the hallmarks of the Patriots offensively in years past has been their ability to execute in the red zone.
Exactly.
Yeah, the red zone was theirs.
Exactly. Yeah. But this year, what we're seeing is the inability for the receivers to, it's not just the receivers, but the running game mm-hmm. to get going in the red zone. Now, in a column that Nora Princiati wrote today for the Boston Globe, it's on BostonGlobe.com, she wrote, quote, now let's look into this. The Patriots are 30th in the NFL in red zone passing, meaning that they'll score a touchdown or convert a first down on 23.1% of plays there. Inside their opponent's 10-yard line, they're 32nd in the league, dead last, succeeding only 17.2% of the time. With 3 yards or fewer, they're 31st in the league, second worst. They're better than only one team, mm-hmm. and that's the Dolphins, who haven't had
dominant team. You got in the red zone, everybody just panics.
Right, but they're better than only the Dolphins, who haven't run a successful passing play in that area. The closer you get, in continuation with what Princiati wrote in the Boston Globe, the closer you get, quote, the worse it looks. With that little space it's generally more efficient to run the ball. So fretting over poor numbers passing from the 1 or the 2 yard line isn't fretting over the problem that's having the biggest impact. The fact that the Patriots are a league worst from the inside the 10 yard line and near that in the red zone in general, it though is most significant. Now, before I even continue, based on what you've seen, especially in these previous 4 games, I'm not even going to look at the first 8. We're talking from the Sunday night game against Baltimore,
yeah,
all the way through Sunday, last week's Sunday that just passed. Mm-hmm. What is the number one source of frustration for Brady that you've noticed once the Patriots have gotten inside the red zone?
He's at least for Brady, the way I see it is, some of the passes and some of the receivers he's got, he's throwing the ball where it should be.
Right.
They're just not executing it.
They're not getting there.
They're not getting there. You know, I mean, many times you've seen it, and it's right there. They do the replay, you can actually see their hands just about to grab the ball, and they just don't get it.
There's been a comedy of errors, too, with Brady throwing where they're supposed to be,
mm-hmm,
and the receiver not going to where the ball's going. I've seen that quite a few times. It's like a comedy of errors sometimes, seeing that, you know, why did that go that way? Why did he do that? And, you know, Brady, of course, is getting rushed, and he's thrown the ball away more than I've ever seen him in his career, just the season alone.
Yeah,
he just keeps throwing the ball away because he can't get these guys either open or they're running the wrong slots.
His offensive line is not giving him the time to get the ball out.
I mean,
how many times has he gone down this year?
He's at least more than 15.
Yeah, I mean, in years past.
I think that has to do with also with his receivers aren't getting open. They're not.
That's a big. They're not breaking cleanly from the line of scrimmage either. So that's also contributing to him to a problem. And these were some numbers that really. That supports your point,
yeah,
about how the Patriots, they're passing the ball more often, especially in the red zone, more than ever.
Right.
In the Boston Globe, this was mentioned in the article that Nora Princiati wrote, quote, in the Patriots' first 6 games of the season, they ran 32 passing plays and 35 rushing plays in the red zone. In the 6 games since, they've run 44 passing plays and 29 rushing plays in the red zone. It's more dramatic if you look at their play selection inside the 10-yard line, where the Patriots threw the ball on 13 plays and ran it on 23 in their first 6 games. And in the 6 games after, they have thrown it on 16 plays and have run it on 14 since.
Interesting.
So which tells me two things. They abandoned the run, which is another point I want to get to just shortly. They have abandoned the run when they've gotten close to the end zone. For what reason, I don't know. And when they try to pass the ball, they're not getting much success either.
No.
So the question I'll pose to both of you is this. Why the shift in dynamic between the first 6 games of the season as compared to the last 6?
That's actually a pretty good question. I mean, play calling, are they... On the outside, of course, we don't know what's going on with the play calling.
But yeah.
On the outside, it looks like they're not confident in the run all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if they've had an extraordinary amount of fumbles with the run. I don't believe they have.
No.
But I have seen over the last couple of games, their runs aren't long runs. They get really short.
Maybe 3 yards, 4 at most. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you look at their whole game, their game is now a short game. Brady isn't airing it out, throwing these long passes.
Intermediate passes, yeah.
Yeah, everything's either a short pass or an attempt for something that just never had a chance.
And I think one of the things you're seeing, too, from the first, you know, 6 games is look at what you had for receivers. You know, I mean, the first game, we didn't have Antonio Brown, but then we had him. You know, we had Demaryius Thomas. We had those guys there in the beginning, like the first couple of games.
Yeah.
Now that you restructure everything and what happens, you know, in football with these guys, now you don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
And the mindset is, well, we can still throw it. We can still throw the ball. Well, you can't. You don't have those weapons.
You don't have that luxury anymore.
No, you don't. You have, like I said before, you have that one slot receiver, Edelman, you know, and mm-hmm. like I said, you double team him. That's it. You're holding Brady.
Yeah.
You got him right there. He's not getting off anything.
You can call into the show at 855-915-WMFO. That's 855-915-9636. So the question I want to ask you, the listener, is this. Do you think that the shift in offensive play calling has contributed to the problems that the Patriots have had offensively, or do you think this is a bit more deeper than just the play calling and is as a result of the attitude that Brady has seemingly begun to carry? Now, speaking of Brady, I want to spend the next several minutes talking about Brady specifically. Okay. Because I had a thought come to me this past week, and I posed a question back in August. You can go in the archives on WMFO.org on the Truth and Right Show, when it used to be from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on Saturdays. I mentioned something in regards to Brady's contract situation. When the contract was announced back in August, the reaction was, "Woo! Whee!" And I said, "Hold up, wait a minute. Wait a minute." I actually went in and looked into the contract. I was like, wait a minute. This is actually a one-year deal.
Yeah, it really is.
So, for the first time in his career, Brady is playing without a contract for the next season. So, the question I want to ask you, too, is do you think that's playing into part of his frustration as to the lack there of security for the next season and beyond? Because that's the reality that he's playing with right now.
You know, you could draw some parallels also how he's put a house up for sale.
Oh, there's so many of them, yeah. So many.
That go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
But that could very well play into it. I mean, do I think that's it? No, because I think this, the way he structured this contract was to finish his career out. You know,
well, that's
here. Yeah.
I think anybody looks at it saying, and of course you've already seen it, the team is 10-2, and everybody's like, he's done. You know, I think part of me says Brady's going to want to say, I'm going to prove them all wrong again, you know, because that's what he does when come playoffs sometimes.
Yeah.
Or most times. But, yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting dynamic, but he has his, this is the first time he's really had his contract like this.
And as much as he keeps saying, you know, I'm going to play until I'm, you know, I think he's realizing, too, I mean, he's getting older. He's got kids, yeah. You know. It might get to the point of him saying, okay, you know, I'll take the 1 year deal because I don't know how good I'm going to be.
Right.
You know, I might, you know, my shoulder's hurting me or, you know, stuff like that there, and just look at it and say,
yeah.
You know, I'll say I'll keep playing and going through that there just to keep the fans and everybody on our side, and we'll go from there.
For sure.
You know, because if he came out and said, this is my last year, everybody would abandon ship.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's the 1 year is the perfect thing, because if he makes it to the Super Bowl, I'm coming back next year. If he doesn't, he could easily just say, you know.
Oh, the heck with this. Right, yeah.
I gave it a shot.
Welp, not my problem.
Yeah.
Bye.
You know, like, I'm adding to another year up in the 40s, and it's my time to go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, that can really play into it. I mean, I don't think he wants to sign a long-term contract, because then that leaves it. Then people might be disappointed if, you know, he signed a 3-year contract and he played 1 year and he's like, I'm done. Because then that really gives you that false sense of security as well.
But here's the thing. He's repeatedly said he wants to play until he's 45. He's 42 years old now.
Right.
He's in age 42 season.
Right.
Now, let's rewind 2 years.
Right.
Let's go back to November 2017. Remember the night the news broke that the Patriots had traded Jimmy Garoppolo to San Francisco?
Yeah.
The swift reaction.
Yep.
My take on that at the time was, so you just traded away your future. This doesn't seem right. Why? And as we later learned, the details that slowly began to come out as to the Cleveland Browns were offered more, but San Fran got the raw, they got the better end of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
But here's something that really sticks out even more now. Brady wanted Garoppolo gone. He wanted him gone because he knew Garoppolo's the next guy.
Yep.
He is that talented. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And no Pats fan is going to sit in and argue with me on that one. Like,
right.
you're not going to win that argument. However, he was traded yet he wasn't given a contract. Do you think now, for example, now go back to 2 years ago, Brady wanted Garoppolo gone. He got his wish. He wanted a new contract extension, multi-year extension. Because mind you, he wasn't going by one-year deals. He wanted a 3-year deal, if at that. But he didn't get it.
No.
Right. So, which leads me to lay this out, and I want both of you to offer your takes on this. Brady got half of his wish. But do you think that potentially that Belichick may actually get his wish in wanting Brady gone? Because let's face it, up until this point, Kraft has historically stepped in for Brady and helped him get that deal.
Right.
But go back to this past summer, and we're going to talk about this again come next month. Kraft, where has he been in all of this?
Silent.
Shh. Silent. Not a word. Not even a fart. Not even a burp. Nothing. So what does that tell me? That tells me this is all on Belichick at this point. But do you honestly really believe that? That it's all on Belichick at this point in terms of his decision making?
You know, Kraft has been silent most of the year. Obviously, he had some problems.
He had problems.
I was just going to say, he's silent because his lawyers are probably saying, keep your name out of everything.
Yeah.
Until this, people forget to a point, he just keep your mouth quiet. That's probably why you haven't heard a lot.
Which is true.
He hasn't made a lot of appearances. He actually was at the Celtics game the other night on, was it a Wednesday?
Yeah, I guess the Heat. Yeah.
But I think that's probably only the second time I've seen him all season. He usually shows up a lot more.
Yeah.
But he hasn't been making those appearances. Is that
even with the Bruins too? He hasn't showed up not one game for the Bruins this year.
Shockingly, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if I say. I mean, Belichick to me has always been the guy who's running the team, and you know, I don't know. It's a tough narrative to follow for me. There's so many other things that are working in there. You know. I don't think Brady, yes, Garoppolo gone. Brady, the big contract, it's not that it's a big contract, it's a contract locking him up. The money has never been an issue for Brady. So let's throw that out there. He's married to a billionaire. And he himself is pretty loaded anyway. So the last couple of contracts mean nothing. He knows he's the face of the team. So does it matter that he has a 3-year contract? Does it? I'm not sure if I say it's an interesting take on it. I just don't know if it makes a difference in his air. Because it's not like the Pats are going to go next year. Well, his contract's up. Let's go get somebody else and let him walk.
And here's the thing. And I remember saying this in August. As I said, don't be surprised if this ends up being his last year in New England based on the developments that took place at the time. And now that we're more than 3/4 of the way through the regular season and we're in the home stretch now, that I'm beginning to think to myself and saying, you know, you would think that Kraft would step in, but he hasn't. But here's the bigger thing. You let Brady walk, and he still wants a 3-year contract. That's the truth. Because that 3-year deal, you know, is going to take him to age 45.
Right.
He gets that 3-year contract, but it's not with New England. What happens then? Because the biggest criticism that I had 2 years ago when they traded away Garoppolo was that Belichick, since day one, his mantra has been a year early is better than a year too late.
Yeah.
You have had that mantra for every single position on your 53-man roster. So now when it comes, and I said this 2 years ago on my social media, and if for the most important position on your team,
you got nothing.
You've got no explanation as to why you traded away your future.
Yeah.
Come on. That tells me that there's a bit of an inconsistency there with what you think.
I think that's changed in the last maybe year or so.
Yeah.
Because before it was always, well, we can plug somebody in at that position.
Mm-hmm.
Gronk left. They haven't plugged anybody in at that position. It's just not.
Matt LaCoste has been a disaster. I'm gonna just put this bluntly right now.
Yeah,
he's been a disaster.
He's not even. It's like he's not even on the team.
Yeah.
So that whole receiving, it's we don't have that tight end to go to. You know, we don't have those positions to go to. So you've raised a great question. We don't have that plug-in thing for those positions. We definitely don't have a replacement for Brady.
Not at all.
If Brady leaves next year, like you said,
you got Jared Stidham. But here's the thing, and I'll ask you this, Bruins Cowboy. If you, for example, let's play devil's advocate. Brady leaves. People cry. They get emotional.
Oh, yeah, it'll be.
It'll be emotional. He leaves. Here comes Jared Stidham. Let's face it, he's an unknown commodity at this point. With the exception of the game against the Jets in week three or week four? I think it was week four. At home. It was at home.
Yeah,
it was week four. At home. Was it? I'm sorry, but
to pull my phone up and look.
Yeah, like but either way, like against the game against the Jets,
right?
And you ain't gonna go based on that small sample size where he threw a pick six. He stinks. No, why are we gonna go with this kid? Like
exactly, that's what everybody's thinking. Time to get rid of him.
Like time to get rid of him. I'm sorry. So if you threw a touchdown, you're going to react. Wow, he's gonna be the next great one, isn't he? Such the extreme reactions of a typical sports fan.
And that's New England.
But we know nothing in terms of Stidham. Obviously, with Brady, you know what you have. A prima donna who happens to be the greatest quarterback of all time. But with Stidham, except for that one drive we threw that pick six against the Jets, you know nothing.
No.
You don't know what you have.
Yeah.
So here's an interesting question. Before we start talking about the game for tomorrow night and what to look out for before we get to the Celtics and Bruins. For next season, if Brady does not return, would you prefer the Patriots to see what they have in Stidham, or would you prefer that they go out and get a free agent quarterback that could be available via trade, i.e. Cam Newton or even a Teddy Bridgewater?
I'd stay with Stidham to see what he's got.
I think you have to.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. To stay with Stidham to see what you have.
Because he already has been. He's already in the organization. He knows how things are running right now.
Yeah.
He knows everything. You bring someone else in, they got to adjust. They got to learn everything. You already have someone right now. Even though he's not performing, he still knows.
He's not even playing, but yeah.
Right. You know, he knows the playbook. He knows the Patriot, quote unquote, Patriot way of how things are going to go. You bring someone else in,
they may not even adapt to
it. Exactly. Yeah, they may not
adapt to it.
Or may take longer than what you'd hope for, yeah.
And then we're throwing away our future. You don't know what he's like. We could be throwing away our future.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing, too.
Same with Garoppolo. I mean, he's gone. That was the future.
Yeah.
I spoke with a lot of people about this. If Brady goes, does Belichick go, too?
No.
You don't think so?
No. And here's why. Because Belichick, and this is part of me doing critical thinking. Now, I'm, for one, I hate to overthink things, especially when it comes to sports. I'm a very matter-of-fact type of personality on the air.
Yeah.
Belichick has his very cavalier way in dealing with Brady, the Brady situation, and I talked about this during training camp. Very cavalier. And even now, up until this point, very cavalier. Whatever happens, happens. We'll see what happens at the end of the season. But there's one problem. You don't know what will happen come the end of the season. Now, here's an even legitimate question. Of course, that's been on the mind of Patriot fans. What if the Patriots go on another run, like we did last year, figure it out on offense, win the seventh Super Bowl title, then what? You're still going to let him walk? Would it shock me? No.
Oh, no.
It wouldn't shock me once, especially with Belichick? No way. Right. Would it shock you if that ended up being the case?
Or you look at it this way. Or, you know, for Brady right now, things aren't going well. Like you say, they go on a run. He comes back. We win that Super Bowl. Now he proves to you, now I want the deal because I've proven to you I can take the worst receivers, get you to a Super Bowl. I think I'm entitled to this here.
Yeah.
And I think that's what that could be one of his mindsets.
Well,
I would agree.
You know, if I do this, now what are you going to do? If I walk, I've already given you seven titles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Give me another 2 years or 3 years till I finish out.
Yeah.
He already proved himself to perform, so let's see if that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Right. No, I agree. If he has a run, that changes everything. Of course, you know, that mentality, we have to, I mean, we're basing, it sounds like doomsday talking about Brady and how bad he's doing when the team is still 10-2. It's really weird. You know, how many, I don't think there's anybody across this country.
There's nowhere else in the United States that has a reaction that we have when the Patriots are suddenly hitting on the edges of rocks. Like, right. Oh my God, is this the end of the dynasty? Blah, blah, blah. Like,
listen,
stop.
It could be a zombie apocalypse.
God, it really drives me nuts. Like, really, we are an overreactionary city. Oh my God, if the Patriots are doing horrible, here we are. The immediate questions. Is this the end of Brady? Is Brady's last days of inheriting New England approaching? Are they approaching the end of the Patriots dynasty as we know it?
Right.
Who's the next guy in the waiting? Is Belichick about to pass gas on the air for the first time? Like, really? Like, have we reached that level of absurdity?
In New England, yes, because you could, like, gosh, you could have a zombie apocalypse. You could have, you know, everything going wrong, grown men will sit there and say, no big deal. You know, it happens. If we lose Brady and stuff like that, you will see grown men cry because that means more to them than anything else.
Well, you got to figure in that this team has won, was it 17 consecutive seasons with 10-plus wins in a row?
Yeah.
Which is by far the
record. That is the NFL record, yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole generation that's never seen those Patriots back in the 90s when they
of course
win. And kind of live through that misery. I mean, I think some people are probably blown out of proportion. The difference, only difference right now is Patriot, you know, is Tom Brady's age.
Of course.
And is he playing at the level as he was last year, or is the problems he's having, either is it him or is it with the receivers?
Yeah.
Because it's tough to say that it's all him.
Because
It really isn't all him.
No, not at all.
Not even, I don't know how close that is to being all him or even being on that level. Is it just we have bad receivers?
But playing devil's advocate too, is, and this is just my thinking.
Yeah.
Is Brady doing this so he proves himself, like I just said, so he can get his contract in New England? Not that I'm saying you're tanking and stuff like that, but
yeah,
are you not doing your 100% best and then going to pop in next couple of games and show the Brady of old so I can say, hey, listen, I still got it. I want that contract. I think I should get it. And like you said, none of us have seen Kraft. So now,
and all of this, not at all, yeah.
So he's not stepping in. So Brady doesn't have, you know, Kraft stepping in for him and stuff like that because he's playing, you know, in the shadows. So could this be Brady saying, okay, I'll get my contract myself. I'll prove to them that I can get it.
Well, I guess tomorrow we'll say that. I mean, we only have a couple weeks left in the season.
Exactly.
And we have a couple big games, tomorrow being one, and, of course, the one against Buffalo being the other. I think pretty much two of the hugest games for the rest of the season.
Oh, exactly.
Especially if they turn out to be losses instead of wins.
For sure.
That's everything to prove.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why tomorrow night's game is going to be very importance, but we're gonna take a music break. But before we go, I gotta tell you, the audience, about the WMFO on donation drive. The WMFO donation drive is still in full swing. Go to WMFO.org and click on the donate tab. Fill out the donations drive Google form and then follow the link at the bottom of the form to the Tufts Giving page to make your monetary contribution. Specific directions on how to donate to WMFO on the Tufts Giving page are included next to the link within the Google form. Help support the station and everything we do. Coming up next, Patriots prediction. We got to get to the Celtics and we got to talk Bruins. So I don't know about you, the listener, the fans, but Celtics and Bruins, in some cases, they're not really getting the appreciation for what they're doing this season. We're going to talk about it coming up next on the Shukri Wright Show because we shouldn't have to wait this long to talk about it. But either way, this is Shukri Wright. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Free Form Radio. Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright alongside in-studio guests, Bruin Cowboy and Lucky Lou. You're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford Tufts Free Farm Radio. Glad you're able to join us on this lively Saturday night. And seriously, I can't believe we're almost hitting New Year's. It's like you kind of want to just give the finger to time for how fast it's moving, but you just can't. There's nothing you can do.
Just over 2 weeks for Christmas.
Oh God.
Because I haven't even started shopping.
I was about to ask, have you even started like holiday shopping at all?
No. Nope.
Any holiday plans whatsoever?
Nope.
That's it. You know, we just wait for it to be over and then that's it.
Oh gosh.
And then, like you said, New Year's.
I know. And before we continue, I want to play for you the PSA, which is brought to you by yours truly, WMFO 91.5 FM Medford. Stay tuned.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes. And you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
And that was the PSA in regards to 60-second prediabetes test. So definitely get tested and checked out. Now, continuing with the Boston Sports Talk, we got 19 minutes, so we're going to jam in Bruins and Celtics talk. Now, I'm sorry, Lou. I'm a little bit of a selfish prick, but I got to start with Bruins first.
No, go right for it. That's fine.
Like, because... because let's face it. let's face it. As well as the Bruins have been playing, Thursday night really, really angered me. And before anything else, Bruins are playing tonight, 7 o'clock on Ness, and they're playing the Colorado Avalanche. Cole Makar, Nathan MacKinnon in the building, take on the best home team in the league still remaining right now at 12-0-5.
Yep.
And this shouldn't be a 12-0-5, because if it wasn't for the ineptitude of the referee who did not call that tripping call that should have been called in overtime, we won't be having this discussion. And I'm sorry, and I'm about to say that call kind of reminded me of one particular non-call in Game 5 of the Cup Final.
Yep.
On Noel Achari. Do you remember?
Exactly. And how did Bruins react to it this time?
This time we threw garbage on the ice.
Garbage on the ice.
If you saw the game on Ness and there was food debris on the ice, people were pissed.
And the vibe in that building was not happy. I have been a season ticket holder for years. Sad to say, I've seen two teams lift the cup in my building. But the vibe in the building after that non-call was, you could just feel how pissed everybody was. I mean, it wasn't that, oh, they won the game and, you know, they beat us. Like, we didn't, pardon the expression, we didn't show up game seven of the playoffs. This was, I would bet anything that the refs turned around to Boston PD and said, you need to escort us out of here, because
they should have said no. for petty sakes.
You know they're angry. If people are throwing the food out there, how much money the food costs, but the government
is
throwing it out.
That's a whole radio show's worth of discussion right there.
But you got to be angry to do that. You
exactly.
Know,
seriously.
But in regards to that non-call, it was horrible, you know? And, you know, you've got coaches now that they haven't really done it in the past, but I think all the coaches throughout the league now are starting to have enough of it. And
yeah, as they should.
And Bruce Cassidy has come out a couple of times this year and saying the officiating is horrible.
Yeah.
You know?
It was horrible, and the in the Stanley Cup final, and this is one. This is going to be one of the things that, that I'm going to touch on a little bit more on next week's show. That I have a special surprise to announce that I'm actually working on for next week's show. Just stay tuned on for just that in just a moment. That one of the key tales of 2019, especially in Boston sports in regards to the Bruins, but even, this even expands even into the NHL. The state of the officiating and Thursday night's game was just a classic example of how horrific it's been. And even in this past spring Stanley Cup playoffs, that was the tune. The horrific officiating that was, especially in Game 7 in terms of Vegas and Sharks series in the first round in the West.
The NHL has to do something with the structure of their officiating too. I'm sorry, I cannot... Once they exit the neutral zone and they cross over, and after 3 minutes of playing in the zone, they score the goal, there is no way, pardon the expression, in hell, that they should be challenging the goal and saying 3 minutes before when they crossed over the line, he was offsides. There should be a time limit. If he crosses over within the minute, you want to call it, fine. But after that, how many goals have been pulled away from the Bruins this year?
Remember that? Remember the game earlier in the season when they went on the opening road trip? In which that had a goal that was called back in Colorado.
Right. In one of the games, they had two goals.
That was the game. Yeah.
And that can't be. You know, I understand you want to come up with new things, but where is this officiating in this going to keep going? Because in the NHL, it's just going downhill.
Yeah.
They're giving them, I understand they're trying to, you know, maybe compete and model it out of other sports of coaches challenge and stuff like that. And I get that. You want to try to make a universal thing. But like I say, in hockey, it's a fast-moving game. You can't, once you cross the neutral zone and go in there and call back and say, oh, after 3 minutes, he was offside. Goals disallowed.
Yeah.
Because then it just destroys the moral of the team.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And the fans, because...
There's something in the officiating has to change. Obviously, the NBA just changed it with adding challenges this year.
Yeah, which I like a lot. Yeah.
To challenge the call, they only allow it once, and you know it takes a timeout away if you don't get it right.
Yeah.
They should at least do something like that, because sometimes we were at the game against the Rangers on Black Friday, and it was a questionable call there. And it was a tripping call that just didn't exist.
Legitimately.
Fell down, and they called that, and you know, that could have cost them the game.
Oh, for sure.
You know? And that's the other thing, too, is at least in the NHL, sometimes we see it, too, is we've been to the games and, like, that tripping call. They called them for tripping. They're showing it on the jump.
On the jump? what exactly is taking them so long to just make the call? Because it's like, if 18,000 Bruin fans can see that and hockey fans can see it on national TV, what's the holdup? Like, come on, let's go.
Yeah, it's just something that the fundamental there of the officiating, that something needs to change.
Yeah.
The non-call that they make a call for, you're not going to review that, but you're going to review something, like you said, 3 minutes, 4 minutes ago. Right? It's a scoring play that, why would you got to make some of this
adjustments. And I think this is the first time you're seeing, I don't know, maybe in any sport, that you've got almost every coach coming out
complaining almost on a nightly basis.
Exactly, and it's not, they're not turning around and it's not saying, oh, you know, the Bruins are just babies, they keep on going. No,
it's league-wide.
Every coach is coming out saying they're going to do something with the officiating. This is bold.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what they're getting at.
Now, as regards to the Bruins themselves, here we are as we're approaching mid-December, and the one thing that sticks out in my mind is this. The Bruins have been overall on such a great tear for the most part throughout the homestand. Now, as they currently stand there, they're 3-0-1 on this homestand, the last game in the homestand before they head out to Ottawa next week. I got to ask, because this is something that really that happened on Thursday that really irritated the heck out of me. Teams are now beginning to say, hey, you want to beat David Pastrnak? Here's how. Take a run.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And massive kudos to John Moore for sticking up for Pastrnak, but it sucks that it has to come in his first game back from injury. So now here's my question to the both of you. At what point do you say to Don Sweeney, you need someone that's going to be willing to drop the gloves? And I'm not saying at the expense of trading away one of your best young players or prospects, But teams cannot continue to have liberty to take your run at your best forward since, dare I say, Cam Neely?
Yeah. Well, look at, you got this stuff, like you said. You can look at the history of this team, and you need your enforcers.
Yeah.
You need those guys. We have been without Thornton. We lost Luch. Granted, they weren't great scorers, but they
dropped the gloves.
But they defended your top players. When that happened,
Chris Kelly too, and he also gets overlooked at times as well.
There was not one person that ever took a chance hitting Bergeron while Luch was on the ice.
Yeah.
And if they did, they knew what they had to deal with. You know, years ago, the Mark Savard hit. What about?
Oh, I remember that. Oh, yeah.
Is that 2010-11?
That was 2010-11, yeah, yes.
As soon as they came back, I forget who hit him at that time.
Was it Mac? No, it wasn't Mac Cook, no.
No.
Shucks. But whoever it was.
When they came to Boston, right off the faceoff, he knew it was going to happen. He knew
yeah.
It was gonna happen. You know what? And they dealt with it. They went on, and it got moved on. But you're right. We don't have... we are always the big bad Bruins.
Yeah.
I know the league has got a lot of fast players now. A lot of
skill players at that, yeah.
And that's good. And I know the Bruins are trying to keep up with that because you need that to score, okay, to win the game.
Yeah.
But you also need your hitters to defend.
I couldn't agree more.
You need those guys to hit on the board, you know, knock the puck off their stick, then let your guys take it. You need that body to push because you keep on hitting that, you know, in the corners. After a while, everybody's slowing down.
Because everybody knows that, and I'm using Pasek as an example because of what he's done and what he's meant offensively to this team this season. They all know that he's not going to go into the corners and battle for loose pucks.
Right.
That's something that that other forwards, like maybe Marchand is willing to do, or even Krejci is willing to do, and you know, hell, even Jake DeBrusk himself.
Right.
But Pasternak is not that type of player.
No.
So my thing is, and Lou, I'm interested in getting your take on this. There's only but so much that you can do to prevent this before a St. Louis decides to say, you know, we're gonna take a run at that guy over there. Yeah, let's just slew foot that man. Okay, that's what happened to. I'm gonna use an actual example. Jesperi Kotkaniemi of Montreal got slew-footed the other night against Colorado.
Yes, he did.
And he got injured. Mm-hmm. Now, last thing you want that have happen is that it happens to one of our guys, and then guess what? You have no one to stick up for. You have John Moore.
Yeah.
And for crying out loud, last season, David Backes, who's not a fighter, decided to say, you know, we're going to drop the gloves and take on the role like, Sweeney, if you're listening, please, not so much from a fan's perspective, but it's only a matter of time before you face a team like the St. Louis Blues, before one of your best players get injured and effectively affect the outcome of that particular game or potentially that series.
Yeah, the season.
You got to protect these players, especially Posh, because he's having such a almost historic season thus far.
Yeah.
He's becoming a target, and I mentioned it when we went to the game Thursday. I'm like, they're getting pushed around a little bit out there.
I don't like it.
It wasn't what I'm used to seeing.
Exactly.
I mean, yes, the skill is out there, but that first part of the period, I think the first 10 minutes of the period, the Bruins came out strong. And they came out effective. And then between the first and the maybe the mid-second.
Mid-second,
pushed around out there. And
it was like guys like Gunnarsson and for crying out loud, like DeBrincat, like getting physical, and it's like, wait a minute, hold up, like where is this coming from?
Yeah. And you got these guys now. I mean, the way the Bruins are playing is, you know, it's almost like they're coming out strong, letting themselves get pushed around to a point so they can, you know, rev it up and come back in the third, because that's the way they've been going.
Yeah.
Right.
But you know, these guys, you can only take a hit to the board so many times after a while without you saying, okay, you know what, I'm injured. I mean, look at how much now Bergeron's out, you know?
Yeah, he's been dealing with a lower body injury that dates back to last season.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, there's the thing. He goes in the corner, he does something, hits him the right way, or they know.
Yeah.
He's still a little sore from last year, so, you know, let's start hitting him, because if we can get him off the puck and have that slowing down, now we got a chance.
Right. And here's one thing that bothers me, especially when we talk about the Bruins of current, which is there's very few, if any, that I can nitpick at and say, well, I don't like this about this team, is the lack of physicality. And I was clamoring for it after the Stanley Cup finals, because my greatest fear at that time, back in June, was that the Blues just laid out a new formula to win a championship. Oh, forget about the skill. Yeah, they have skill players and Vladimir Tarasenko and a good defenseman in Alex Pietrangelo and Colton Pareko, but they were beating players through the ice in order to get the cup.
Look when we won the cup. Look at who we had for a team.
But we had a balance between toughness with Lucci, Thornton, Kelly, and Adam McQuaid, who was a rookie, and skill, obviously, between Bergeron, Horton, Lucci, and so forth.
And that's the thing there is you had people like, you know, McQuaid that in an instant. It didn't matter. I mean, he got injured a lot. Doesn't matter. He still, someone hit someone, he stood right up.
Exactly.
It didn't matter that he broke his hand. He's going to be out for 6 weeks. It didn't matter, you know,
that
was him. I'm here to defend my guys. We don't have that.
Not anymore.
And that big bad Bruins is, in my opinion, not here.
It's not here. Like, you can't look at this roster and say, maybe that guy resembles the big bad Bruins. No, it's nowhere to be found. And in a season where there has been very little to complain about in terms of the Bruins so far, and the fact that they've gotten to such a great start, the thing that I keep coming back to, as especially now that tonight will mark game number 29 of the season, the thing that keeps coming back to me is, if you're Don Sweeney and you start looking at areas in which you can get better at between now and the February 24th trade deadline for the NHL, what's the number one area that you look at with this roster and say, we could use a potential upgrade in terms of like the bottom six forwards and so forth? But, I mean, there has been rumors circulating between the Taylor Hall being possibly available for trade, what's it going to cost? But if I'm the Bruins, you can't necessarily even look at Taylor Hall, let alone as a rental.
No.
Because of the cap space situation. And on top of that, the asking price is going to be too steep.
And yet again, you don't want to bring him in, but look at who we got now. We still got Pasta.
Yeah.
We still got Marchand. Right now, I mean, Bergeron's a little injured, but if you look at the stats right now, out of the top five for goals and everything, plus and minus time.
Yeah.
They're in the top five, both Pasta and Marchand.
Yeah.
So it's not the scoring that we need. We need it on the back end. We need a little bit stronger defense.
Yeah.
You need you need the big guys, but let's face it, our big guy, Chara, I mean, he's getting older.
He is.
See it. And he knows he's only had that 1 year. When I met him at the team event, you know, for the season ticket holders, I said to him, I said, you've been my favorite for years, and, you know, I said, I hope to see you more, but, you know, and he goes, his reaction was, we'll see.
And rightfully so. He's 42 years old.
Exactly. So, and who's our other, you know, for defense that we can step up? The only other person I've seen step up
is McAvoy, but him jumping into fighting is a concern because he's not that guy.
Right, and the only other one I've seen do that is Krug. And he's tight. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He's
not the type to do it.
No, I mean, he'll step up, but it's like having your little brother come up to you.
Oh, my God.
probably going to people who want to drop the gloves, and they're looking at him like, really?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. But, you know, before we go, we got about maybe a minute and 45 seconds. Quick thoughts on the Celtics. And quick analysis on what the season has been for the Celtics so far. Are you pleasantly surprised with what they've been able to accomplish, given the expectations heading into the season?
I think the expectations outside the area may have been a little bit lower than what this team is. This team's loaded with talent.
Yeah.
Yes, we're a little deficient as when it comes to a big man.
Mm-hmm.
Although everybody wants Taco to play, he ain't ready. But when it comes to the rest of the team, I mean, it's loaded with talent, and I think a lot of the major networks seem to look past, they're still looking past Boston, saying, that's not the real deal. But reality is, this team is actually putting up points. They're playing great defense.
Yeah.
and they're doing it without that super big man.
And they're doing it they're doing it against top elite teams. They're 5-2 against some of the very best teams in the league.
The last two nights they played the best team in the West, and they played the best team in the East.
Right.
Second best. I'm sorry.
Second best. Yeah.
And second best in the East, and they beat both of them. And pretty big confidence there, knowing that the Celtics can go up against any of these teams, including like the Clippers, which was, you know, one of those teams that's predicted to win it, and they had a toe to toe on the road with them.
Yeah, they went toe to toe with Miami the other night.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's looking real good. It's looking really good.
I agree. Quick prediction for tomorrow night. Who do you got? Chiefs, Pats, score, go. Doesn't matter.
I'd still like to see the Pats, but score-wise, I'm going to say it's only going to be by a field goal if they win.